Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Quick reminder that I'll be moderating the second of our first principles debates between Demos and the Ayn Rand Institute Thursday night at the Skirball Center at NYU. Tickets, once again, are free, but we do ask you to reserve them through our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. Also, at It's a Free Country Now, in advance of that event, we have a Freedom Quotes quiz. 5 quotes per day, today through Thursday. Go every day and take the Freedom Quotes quiz and see if you can identify who said things like, "Freedom is not defined by safety. Freedom is defined by the ability of citizens to live without government interference." Or someone else who said, "None are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they are free." Take our Freedom Quotes quiz at itsafreecountry.org and sign up for your free tickets to our freedom debate Thursday night at itsfreecountry.org. By the way, we'll be previewing that debate after the 11 o'clock news this morning with the two debaters. We know him from his talking business column in the New York Times business section, but now Joe Nocera has what some people might consider graduated to a twice-weekly column on the main op-ed page. His first entry ran in Saturday's Times, and he joins us now. Hi, Joe. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me this morning.
Does the ground feel different under your feet? Does the air feel lighter to breathe now that you're an op-ed columnist?
My colleagues in the business section keep referring it to the ivory tower, but I certainly hope it is not. I certainly hope that it does not become an ivory tower for me. I want to keep doing reporting. I want to keep trying to break news. I want to keep, delving into things that other people aren't delving into, primarily in the area of business.
Well, if the Krugmans and the Brookses and the Friedmans can do it, you can do it too.
Well, thank you, sir.
You are a known financial industry watchdog, and you chose Warren Buffett scandal for your first editorial page column. Why is Buffett under fire right now?
Well, he's under fire because one of his aides did something that really looks like some kind of cross between front-running and insider trading. I mean, sleazy if not illegal. And then wound up, leaving the company. But Buffett has always etched out a reputation as somebody who was a straight talker, honest, no BS. And in this case, he has gone out of his way to put up a smokescreen to sort of let this guy off the hook. And a lot of people are upset with what his aide, David Sokol, did, but a lot of other people are also upset with the way Buffett is kind of using his great reputation to try and get this guy off the hook.
So,
and that's what I wrote about. That's what I was offended by. And I think I don't think Buffett is quite the saint that he's made out to be.
And this is an insider trading issue. And listeners, we can take a few phone calls for Joe Nocera on this because it may be kind of a gray area. I wonder if you've ever been tempted to use insider information from your own job, any listener hearing this, when making investments. If so, what did you do? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, or post to our comments page at WNYC.org. We could also take, if Joe's amenable to this, I suspect he'll be, any suggestions for topics that you might like him to explore in the rarefied air of the op-ed page, 212-433-WNYC. But we're talking insider trading. Have you ever seen it at your job? Have you ever been tempted yourself based on something you knew? And where should the line be? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Joe Buffett released a statement last Wednesday saying, quote, "Neither Dave nor I feel his Lubrizol purchases were in any way unlawful." And Jason Zweig, writing in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend, quoted a UCLA law professor who said that Sokol's trading falls under, quote, "an enormously gray area of the law." What does the law say about when you can profit from something that you sort of legitimately find out in the course of doing your job?
Well, if you work for the company, you are an insider if you find this information out. And the truth of the matter is the SEC has over the course of time broadened the definition of insider trading, I think, almost to the breaking point. I mean, I'm not convinced that every case they bring is worth bringing, but this case, this is a tricky case because it's hard to describe it. It's not classic insider trading. It's almost a form of front running, where what he did was he bought some stock in Lubrizol Oil, which had been brought to him by investment bankers thinking it might make a good fit for Berkshire Hathaway, Warren's company. He then, you know, basically maneuvered to have Buffett buy the company. So it strikes me as a form of insider trading because he bought the stock and then he did something. He took action that had a material effect on the price of the stock, which he then profited from. But the professor, I mean, Jason's a terrific columnist and a very smart guy, and he's totally right about this. And that's why I find Buffett's actions so obnoxious, because he, knowing that this is a gray area, he is saying, I, the great Warren Buffett, am pronouncing this to be legal. Mm. And you know, since when does Warren Buffett... The distinction for Warren Buffett is between being what's legal and illegal. He's always stamped himself as a man who is above reproach.
Could he himself be legally liable in any way here? Because according to the narrative, Sokol told Buffett that he owned shares in Lubrizol and then encouraged Buffett to go out and buy the company.
That seems a little unlikely. I think the real upshot of this for Buffett is that it is a wake-up call to his investors and, for that matter, to the government regulators about how poorly the poor controls Berkshire Hathaway has. I mean, most companies, if a guy of Dave Sokol's place in the masthead or his stature were to buy stock in a potential takeover target, he would have to report that immediately to the company, and he probably wouldn't be allowed to do it. So the fact that Berkshire Hathaway doesn't have those kind of strictures is, I think, quite troubling for the shareholders of Berkshire Hathaway.
Isaac in New City, you're on WNYC with Joe Nocera. Hello.
How you doing, fella? Listen, my situation is twofold. One, I'm a psychotherapist, and I work with CEOs of companies, and I get a lot of inside information. So the temptation is great, but you have to remain, you know, professional about it and maintain your ethics.
Can I break in here? In your particular case, there is a great example of somebody, a psychotherapist, who did trade on inside information, the wife of Sandy Weill, many years ago.
Yeah.
And he got caught, and he went to jail.
Well, you have to know your boundaries, and you have to know your ethics, and you have to have some sense of morality. And it's also not in the best interest of the patient. It's a betrayal of trust. The other issue is I have a daughter who works in a pharmaceutical corporation at a high level, and she can't talk to me, and so we don't have the freedom to discuss things about what she's doing, which I'm very interested in. So I had a contract with her that I would never buy stock in her company so that we can talk freely and she could share her concerns with me. So it's an interesting problem. The temptation is great.
And then you won't tell her about the inner torturings of the CEOs who you consult, right?
Yeah, no, you have to know how to keep quiet, and you have to...
All right.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's very, very tempting. Greed gets in the way.
Interesting. Isaac, thank you very much. And someone else, Natalia in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. You had a temptation to insider trade?
No, it's more like I think that it's not... In the field that I'm in the art business, and that it's not necessarily seen as insider trading if you buy an artist's work for a gallery or an institution that also sells the works. You know, everybody sort of has access to what's on the market. If a dealer will sell to you as another dealer, and, you know, quite often people hold on to artworks for months or years, and, you know, it's generally seen as, you know, accepted and collegial if you take it back to the dealer who sold it to you, and you, you know, both resell and benefit from the profit and the increase in value in the object. So, you know, it's, I think it's kind of an example of having inside information. When you know an artist's market, you understand the values and the potential for the artist's growth.
Yes.
And, you know, if you sort of go through the accepted channels to resell the work, then it seems fine to me.
Right. Natalia, thank you. And that, I don't know if there's a Wall Street equivalent to that, Joe. That sounds like just doing your homework.
Yeah, that sounds, that's what it sounds like to me, too. I mean, I mean the Wall Street equivalent is you buy an undervalued company thinking that eventually the market will either figure out its value or some smart CEO will figure out its value and buy it. And, yeah, that doesn't strike me. I mean, the art market has its fair share of dirty dealings, but this doesn't seem like it would be in that category.
All right. We're running out of time. We also have a bunch of people who are calling in with topic suggestions.
I need them.
All right.
I
ready?
I used to write once a week. Now I write twice a week. So bring it on.
Now that Joe Nocera is on the op-ed page, we're going to run through a few of these real quick, then we'll get your reaction. Marie in Westchester, what's your suggestion? Marie, are you there? Marie, what do you want Joe Nocera to do?
I would like him to review the IRA status that is now presently geared toward people who do not use IRAs as their primary pension funds, as it was years ago. And instead now there are certain things involved with IRAs that make it very difficult. Like, for instance, you must take your money out within a certain period of time, years, mm-hmm. and that screws everything if the husband and wife are different ages. But are
So to make it easier for people, hang on, Joe. Bob in Rego Park, what's your suggestion for Colin?
Ryan, continue to do an amazing job. My suggestion is this on tax evasion. There's literally trillions of dollars of taxes the government doesn't collect. Just New York City alone from wholesaling places. The New York Times doesn't write about that. I'd really like you to get into that, and you could actually balance the budget on just the amount of money not collected from tax evasion.
All right, one more.
That's a good one.
Tom and Seabright, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning. Mr. DeSera, you know, over the past month, two of the most progressive liberal voices on the Times left the page, Rich and Herbert. And I'm just wondering where your political philosophical take is going to be. Is it going to be more to the right, pro-business, just things a little tweaking, a few bad apples,
well,
or more to the left?
I believe in the William Sapphire dicta, which is you kick them when they're up. I'm not a conventional liberal. I am not a conventional conservative. I'm more of a pragmatist than anything else. I have some views that liberals will totally agree with, but I'm not always going to preach to the converted because there are a handful of issues where I am not aligned with the conventional liberal view, as you'll discover over the coming months.
Real quick on the other two IRAs.
I think retirement benefits in itself is a worthy subject to get into.
And tax evasion. Do you agree with that caller that there's a lot of tax evasion out there?
I'm sure it is, but I've also, I don't know if you read my last Talking Business column, it's a case where the IRS went after somebody for no good reason, and they couldn't get him on tax evasion, so they got him on lying on a liar loan. So,
right,
I mean,
but
I
you
think,
were making a different point in that
yes,
excellent
I mean,
column. You were saying they went after the small borrowers in housing, in the mortgage scandals, rather than the big lenders, and Bob, our caller, is saying, look, there's all this corporate tax evasion out there.
Well, my view on that, which I actually think probably will write about very soon, is, you know, GE has a fiduciary the problem is not GE, the problem is the government. GE has a fiduciary responsibility to maximize income, maximize profits for shareholders. Well, of course they're going to try and minimize their tax bill. But who creates all the loopholes that allow them to do that? You know, if you had a standard corporate tax rate without a lot of loopholes, you could lower it from what it currently is and still generate a ton more revenue, and that's really what they ought to do.
All right. You are off to the races on the op-ed page.
I mean, that seems obvious. Yeah, I'm going to have a lot of fun.
And listeners, if you want to send tweets to us, which we will happily pass along to Joe, for op-ed columns from former business columnist Joe Nocera of the New York Times, use the hashtag... What was it, Megan? No, NOSERA tips. Okay, and we'll pass them along to you. And all I can say, Joe, is now that you're on the op-ed page, I hope you have more memory for your inbox.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Thanks a lot for coming on. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, yes, there are more jobs created in America this year than last year, but we will speak to an organization in the Bronx that works with people who are hard to place. Stay with us.